Cosmic Shed.
Hello and welcome to the Cosmic Shed. I'm Andrew and it's just me in the shed today. Now, back in the early days of the Cosmic Shed, Ben, who you may remember if you've been a subscriber for that long, handed me a CD by a band called Public Service Broadcasting. The CD was entitled The Race for Space, and it became a bit of a sensation, not only here in the shed, but around the world, with an album which explored the race for space between the Americans and the Russians, with songs like Gagarin and Go, which I'm sure all of you, even if you don't have the album, and you should have the album, will have heard. This coming weekend is the Blue Dot Festival at Jodrell Bank in Cheshire. Jodrell Bank being the wonderful site of the Lovell telescope and various other radio telescopes. And there's a music and science festival taking place there. We've brought you a podcast from there before. We'll be doing that again, as Maddie and I will be at the festival this weekend under that incredible Lovell telescope. But one of the bands performing there on the Friday is Public Service Broadcasting. And I managed to catch up with Jay Wilgoose just now and talk to him about Every Valley, their new album, performing at Blue Dot, and of course, The Race for Space. And I began by asking him whether the Apollo era was something that had always fascinated him.
I think it was more of an existing or a pre-existing interest than anything else we've done to date, except for maybe Everest, I suppose. But yeah, a lot of the stuff we cover is an interesting subject-wise, but it's kind of covered, certainly in the early days, because of the availability of material. So, it doesn't necessarily coincide with a great personal interest in it. For example, I don't really know a great deal about Spitfires or Second World War or anything like that. So I think with Apollo, it was much more of a personal interest. Again, I think my knowledge was fairly superficial. You know, I kind of knew the headlines, as it were, but I think I was more drawn to the story just because it's such an incredible one, really. And very keen not just to focus on the American side, but also to kind of try and balance it off or play it off against the Russian escapades as well.
Were you kind of, well, we're going to do a race for space, and then you just immerse yourself in documentaries, reading and around the topic and trying to find the stories within it? Is that how that process works?
Yeah. Basically, you know, with this album, I had the idea quite a long time ago to do it. So, I mean, well before the release of the first album. So, when we had a few reviews of the first album, the first few gigs saying like, oh, where do they go next? It was kind of like, well, I know, don't worry. That's kind of in hand. Don't worry about that. It was in the pipeline for a long time. The thing I was definitely very keen to do was make sure it wasn't just about America and, for a sense of balance and for a sense of drama, to try and get the Russians and the Russian material on there. I think the first book I read was Andrew Chaikin's Man on the Moon. And I read some sort of Soviet stuff. The Soviet stuff was harder to find, so I ended up relying more on the film documentaries provided by the BFI, which kind of came from the Russian propaganda unit and were shown. I'm sure they were designed to be shown in classrooms and so forth, to kind of talk about how great the socialist collective was and how many engineering triumphs and human triumphs they could have with their way of government. So it was kind of mostly reading on the American side initially, and then lots of documentaries on the Russian side. And then once kind of got the subject matters sort of narrowed down, kind of started diving into the NASA audio collection and going into the transcripts and the Apollo flight journals and just trying to sort of home in on the stuff that was relevant that would allow me to tell the story, hopefully in a fresh way.
Well, okay. Listen, I have got lost in those Apollo tracks, you know, the recordings from the missions, because there's so much of it, right? So I just want to say well done for finding your way out and picking the stuff.
It's really David Woods and the Apollo flight journal. They saved my bacon. You know, they're the ones who did all the hard work. Their annotated transcripts are just an absolute wonder. You know, they're, it's not just the transcripts. It's actually telling you what the astronauts and mission control are talking about and adding extra data and extra audio files in some cases that aren't actually in that audio collection. So I got the chance to meet him actually before our Glasgow gig, I think in 2015, and and say thank you. And he very kindly gave me his signed book. So, yeah, it all works very nicely. But, you know, I don't think there was a great deal of credit laid at my door for that. I think it's using the resources that others have spent hours and hours to develop, really.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But you did create something incredibly beautiful out of it. Now, actually, Valentina Tereshkova is obviously a personal heroine of mine. And I wanted to ask you about that particular track, because you had the Smoke Fairies on that one. It works incredibly well. I mean, those voices are just wonderful. The construction of that, how does that happen? Because it's not normal for you to have singers brought in. So at what point did you think, right, this needs this particular voice, and how does that happen for you?
Well, I think it was going through the material, going through what I had on Valentina Tereshkova, and wanting to cover, you know, a very important female based story, and you know, get some female voices on the album. It's just one of the sort of drawbacks of the kind of material that we use and the kind of stories that we cover, is there aren't a great deal of female voices on there. So I was really looking forward to, you know, seeing the Valentina documentary that the BFI had and some of the other material, and it came along, and you know, she spoke in Russian, and then the voice translated in. It was a man doing the translation. I just couldn't believe it. I was so just irritated by that, that I didn't want to be just another man talking over women, and you know, adding yet more male voices onto an already male heavy album. So decided to kind of get a bit more abstract with it, and just with Smoke Fairies kind of concoct this kind of dreamy sort of ambient soundscape that had some, you know, very prevalent female voices on it, and just use the tiny little snippet of Valentina in space in the middle of it, which is the only bit of kind of untranslated material that I had of her. So yeah, it was an attempt to kind of refocus it on you know, women's stories rather than just being solely about men. That's kind of what led me to go down the sort of the collaborator route in the first place, I think, because without that, I might have just sort of ploughed ahead on my own furrow. But they brought something entirely different to that song and to the album in general, I think. So it was a happy and fortuitous annoyance in the first place.
Yeah, obviously, anybody who thinks electronic music plus Apollo equals, before your album, Brian Eno, right?
Hmm.
So,
which is fair enough. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. But now it's you and Brian Eno. But at that moment, you've got to make.
I don't think so.
There it is. Yeah, listen, I'm here to tell you it is. I know. Look at all those CDs there. I know. How do you begin to make an album full of music about the race for space with that iconic music already existing?
Well, I didn't listen to any of Brian Eno's stuff at the time. You know, I'd kind of listened to it a long time in the past and liked it, but you know, I wasn't kind of using it as a reference or as a challenge, because it probably would have just become incredibly depressing for me and thought, what's the point, you know? So I kind of missed it in a state of sort of blissful ignorance, really, which is quite a good state to create things in, I think. You know, as long as it's backed up by the sort of the right amount of research, so you're not actually ignorant about the subject matter, I suppose, but ignorant about a lot of other people's efforts to do this in the past. You know, I knew a lot of people had done it, and a lot of people had probably made a much better job of it than we ever would. But I think you just kind of set all that to one side, and you just get on with the vision that's kind of come to your head. And you know, I guess I'm just a bit lucky that, you know, if I'm reading about something, if I'm watching something, it's just a very good prompt, really, to sort of get your own musical ideas flowing and get you thinking about the kind of music that you would try and make to translate the feeling that you have, because you're kind of trying to emotionally interpret the music, emotionally interpret the material that you're working on with your music. So, you know, it's just very clear ideas, like using Kennedy's speech and just having a very pure, just vocal, sort of starting off very fragile, sung by a choir, you know, all that kind of stuff. It comes to you as what seems like a fairly obvious idea, but it's translating that idea into reality that's often quite frustrating and disappointing at times as well.
Yeah, no, completely. I don't want to compliment you too much, right? But you did it incredibly well. And there's moments in the album that are just, for me as a space nut, right, they're just utterly breathtaking. There's that moment on the other side, literally your piece of music and the other side of the moon, where you're waiting for the signal to come back. Now, how you managed to add something to that, I don't know, because that is just the most breathtaking piece of audio in its own right. And the light touch that you do with that is incredible.
Oh, that's extremely kind. Thank you. I was thinking out of everything to do with that album, that's the one that most surprised me, because I wasn't really expecting it to get the response that it got and continues to get, which is nice, because sometimes, you know, I say sometimes, it's the only time it's ever really happened, but Go, I was pretty confident with that one. I think I knew that we had a bit of a winner there, but I didn't really. And I think Gagarin, I knew, was slightly out there, and I think might kind of raise a few eyebrows and make people think, oh, what's all this? I'm not sure about this, but in a good way, ultimately. But, you know, I knew it was catchy, but I didn't really think the other side would kind of become the standout that it has done, you know, of the album and of our live sets as well. So it's a very pleasant surprise.
Just one more thing on that as well. It's literally just a compliment. Sorry, I should have thought of some questions. Fire in the Cockpit, utterly harrowing. That is a piece of history which breaks my heart just to think about it. Think about those people, and think about what happened. And then you put it into musical form just to make it hurt even more. But the way that you go from that in the album to and now a new breakthrough in Space Conquest with EVA is just, it's brilliant. You know, it lifts you in a way. And that construction of an album like that is such a joy for music fans. And I'm a music fan and a space fan. So again, thank you.
Thank you. Well, I think I got lucky with both those, because I think initially, you know, the Race to Space, I wasn't actually intending it to be an album. I thought that might be kind of stretching a bit, because we'd previously done The War Room, and that was it's a five track EP. Then we did the first album, which was kind of much more scattershot and hopped around a lot. And then I thought, oh, maybe six or seven tracks, you know, kind of mini album type thing. The more I kind of, you know, got into the research and got into trying to tell the story, the more I realized there was stuff that really I couldn't leave off. Had the fantastic Alexei Leonov footage, you know, of him floating in space like a kind of very 1960s version of Gravity, you know, sort of tethered only by this umbilical cord, and knew that I wanted to use that if I could. And you know, reading books like A Man on the Moon and reading Michael Collins's autobiography, Carrying the Fire, which is the best astronaut-written book that I read on the subject by far, I think, it just became clear that, you know, Apollo 1 is... You can't tell a story of Apollo with all its successes without telling the story of the tragic failure that kind of started the whole program off, and how that subsequently knocked on to Apollo 8 going early to the moon. And it felt kind of disrespectful to leave it off, more disrespectful to leave it off than to cover it, because I was equally worried that covering it was disrespectful. So I think we just went with a very straight ahead, very somber piece of music for that. And EVA just kind of dropped in after as a, you know, these are the kind of the highs and lows of space travel. You go from Gagarin, which is this kind of joyous, upbeat, you know, celebration of life and achievements, and then straight into Fire in the Cockpit, and actually using some of the same musical ideas as well. The string parts very similar from Gagarin into Fire in the Cockpit. So you're trying to kind of link these things and juxtapose them, and not be too afraid of making those big jumps, really. And that's something, you know, talking about sort of space and storytelling and science fiction, you know, that's something that 2001 is, and Kubrick in general is a big source of inspiration, because you get these enormous narrative leaps in his stuff, and he just doesn't seem to care, which you know, I find incredibly liberating as a viewer, and also as somebody who's trying to create something myself. I think you don't necessarily have to kind of tie everything up for everyone. You can let people find their own way through it.
Yeah. So are you going to do something science fiction based?
It's not really on the cards, no, not for the moment. You know, I'd never say never. It depends if somebody comes along and asks us to do something in particular. But yeah, you know, I'd love to have a crack at writing some music for film, but again, we haven't been asked, so it's hard to say. But I certainly would do that.
Totally. I mean, you're a science fiction fan then, are you?
Yeah, you know, I think probably most of my top five or top 10 films probably would be science fiction, you know, stuff like Blade Runner and 2001. And just as a kid kind of growing up in the golden age of science fiction, really, science fiction films, you know, like Star Wars and stuff like Flight of the Navigator. And I think Space Camp was another big one for me growing up. And you know, you had a lot of that kind of stuff, and it all just seeps into your consciousness, I suppose, and ends up coming out weirdly sort of 20 odd years later in the form of this album.
Awesome. Right, okay, so you have another album now, which is Every Valley. Topic wise, it seems to, because I like folk music, and it seems to fit strongly among the folk music world. Tell me about why you've gone for this topic.
Well, I think it's a certain kind of bloody-mindedness and wanting to kind of confound and confuse in a good way, though, you know, not become predictable. I think a lot of people could have easily, you know, if after the Race of Space, a lot of people would get in touch saying, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? And Facebook stuff would be, you know, oh, I bet they're doing this next. I bet they're doing that next. And it was all stuff that seemed quite predictable to me. And as a result, I just didn't really find it that attractive a proposition. And I thought, what I want to do really is to do something very different to the Race of Space, something that kind of takes people off in a direction that they didn't expect to go in, but one that proves ultimately, you know, as interesting or as diverting, but just in different ways. And it's kind of following the path, you know, the well-established path of all the people and all the bands and all the filmmakers and all the musicians and writers that I like. You know, they don't just stay stuck in one genre or stuck in one area. They do new and interesting things and kind of branch out. And I think that was the kind of the idea that, you know, underwrote the album, as it were. And as soon as I started thinking in that manner and thinking about kind of the material that was available through the BFI, knowing they had a lot of National Coal Board films, and just wanting to kind of tell a more human story, I suppose, something a bit more relatable on an everyday level, you know, mining swiftly kind of came to the foreground. And then, you know, as if mining wasn't a big enough challenge, you know, just thought to set it in one particular geographical area, take it to South Wales, set it in and amongst that community. And by kind of really putting it under the microscope in that way, hopefully actually broaden the scope of it and broaden the kind of the metaphor and the way that you could kind of apply it to all sorts of industries across the developed and developing world, really, and the problem of industrialization and the problem of deindustrialization.
Looking back then, that what they were doing, closing the mines, was terrible. Utterly. I'm from Manchester. There was a very much a worldview in Manchester that what Thatcher and her government were doing was terrible, right? And the stories that are told of the people in those towns that were destroyed by it are devastating. And the fact that they didn't provide those people with something else rather than just killing the towns with nothing to replace it is unforgivable from my point of view. But the climate would be much, much worse if we'd carried on coal mining.
Yeah, it's really what makes Progress such a key song on the album, is because in the past we've looked at progress of mankind and humanity in all sorts of ways, and it's kind of been much more straightforward. It's been like, this happened, this development came out, look at this bit, wasn't this bit great? Space travel, the first ascent of Everest, you know, defeating fascism in the Second World War, you know, the invention of colour TV, all these kind of things are all kind of much more straightforward stories to tell. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, getting rid of coal mining, moving to more renewable and cleaner energy is progress. You know, that's progress for humanity. It's undeniable. But at the same time, I think what this album is looking at is the other side of the progress coin, which is, you know, the people who get left behind by it, the people who kind of get neglected by it, and how progress for one kind of group or set of people doesn't necessarily mean progress for everybody. And asking, like, I suppose it's just looking at the other side of that coin. You know, it's kind of bittersweet irony, really, that to drive humanity forward, some people end up suffering always. And I think this album is much more an examination of the people who end up suffering rather than, you know, a celebration of the actual events that move us forward. I mean, I think you'd have to be either obtuse, or not to beat around the bush too much, being a little bit dense to read this album as a kind of a celebration of coal itself as a commodity and you know, almost as if we were wishing the mines were still open. I don't know how any kind of sensible cognitive person could kind of could listen to this album and think that's what we were trying to say.
Cool. What I would say is, I don't know if you've noticed, but the world is full of people who are not thinking properly.
Yeah, we don't make albums for people like that. I mean, I've had some people get in touch on Twitter and say, like, well, why have you got a song called People Always Need Coal? You're agreeing with Trump. And I just think if that's your level of intellectual rigor, I suppose, if you have no sense of irony, if you have no idea of the point of that song is to try and say that's not even 10 years before the mining strikes, when all these industries and these towns are going to be absolutely decimated. And you have these incredibly arrogant statements of people always need coal. It's a job for life. There's money, lots of money and security. And look how quickly that changed. You know, it's about how these great solid truths of our age very quickly can be turned on their head. And I never think it hurts to be reminded of that, because people get so... people are so sure of their ideas in one particular area, and you know, ideas change, things change very, very quickly. So it's pointing to that in a very darkly ironic way.
And you've got Tracy Ann Campbell from Camera Obscura, right? If you were going to pick someone to do Bittersweet, then that's where you'd go. Was it as simple as that for you?
I think, you know, it wasn't an instant decision, because I think I had been thinking I should, you know, go for a Welsh voice for this, and thinking everything should be much more, you know, literal in that sense, and be much more from the area. But I think the more I thought about it, the more I thought, actually, that's just being overly prescriptive, and you don't need to approach the album in that way. And as soon as I kind of made that leap, then yeah, it was just listening to Camera Obscura. I think it was the song Do It Again, actually, and just hearing her voice and the way she's so good at kind of singing in a particular, you know, there's an air of bitter sweetness to it, but she's also got kind of great power sort of on descending lines, and it's not an easy thing for a singer to be able to do, I don't think, to be able to kind of move around and do those little cartwheels, and she just does it kind of effortlessly. So as soon as I put two together, then yeah, it was, you know, she's the only person we approached for that song, and the only person I really, you know, thought could really do the job in the way that I wanted it done. And it was just incredibly fortunate that she was available and up for it, and, you know, such a good collaborator for us.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. Awesome job. And you sing on it?
Yeah, not on that song, yeah, on a song called You and Me. And that was always intended to be, you know, it's intended to be on the album. It's a kind of a duet, sort of Welsh language, English language duet, and it was supposed to be a kind of... imagining what it's like to be at the centre of a community that's being torn to shreds by sort of enormous uncontrollable forces and all these kind of things weighing down upon you, and you know, the odds and life in general just seeming to be stacked against you, and drawing comfort and solace from, you know, personal relationships within that, and also the community in general, and kind of relying on each other and sticking up for each other. And that related a great deal to something that was going on in my personal life at the time, with my wife being very ill, and all sorts of other stuff going on as well. But it also works in the context of the album. And I had, you know, I got Lisa Jen Brown on board from Nineback, and she sings on it, and she's incredible. But I had somebody else lined up to do the male part in English, and sadly, they just kind of stopped returning my calls. So it was a question of, like, how much do you want this on the album? Maybe you should just do it yourself, because it does have a kind of personal element to it. So you're just gonna kind of, I suppose, just swallow it, really. Just kind of get on with it and do it. And I don't enjoy singing it. I don't enjoy the singing part of playing it live. We've played it live 5 or 6 times with Lisa, but I do really like the song, and it's a very important part of the album. So yeah, I just kind of took one for the team there.
Yeah, it turned out perfectly beautifully from my side of things, but I know what you mean. It's not nice singing, is it, if you don't do it?
I've got a great luxury on that song, which, you know, Lisa can carry that with her fingers. You know, I'm kind of riding on her coattails very much, and there's only a couple of bits where I'm exposed to singing on my own, so the rest of the time she is, you know, doing the heavy lifting, which is good, because somebody needs to.
Right, so I'm coming to Green Man Festival, where I'm assuming... Mm-hmm. that this album will be played pretty much in its entirety, right?
No. I don't think we'd be doing that. I don't like album playback stuff. I much prefer to kind of weave our own way through, you know, through our set and kind of find the musical links and again contrasts between albums rather than just kind of sticking with one subject matter. We've done a couple of playthroughs of The Race for Space as part of science festival stuff, but they're strange gigs. I don't mind them, but and they'd normally give you a chance to do stuff with bigger production, but I'd prefer not to if we had the choice. So no, we'll be hopping around. You know, we're hoping to get some special guests on board and get some people along for it, and I think the focus will probably be on everybody. I think more tracks than most will be on there, but it's a festival, you know. You don't really want to be playing stuff like Mother of the Village there, because it's going to really kill the atmosphere. It's like turning up and playing Fire in the Cockpit, you know. It's not really what people are after, I don't think. So it'll be a good show, and I think it'll be quite a moving experience, especially, you know, we hung around in Crick Owl a bit during the making of the album, and it's going to bring back a lot of memories for us, I think.
Awesome. Funnily enough, I'm going to be at Green Band Festival doing my show about the moon, so that brings us back to The Race for Space.
Mm.
And this weekend, Pale Blue Dot Festival, playing in front of that telescope, does that make you want to do more Race for Space in that gig?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to kind of this to come across as a moan, but we can't see the dish when we're playing, so it doesn't actually make a difference for us, because okay. It's just, you know, it's a big stage at a festival and a big crowd, and it's great to be there, but we can't see it, so we don't get the benefit of the Lovell telescope, you know, and it is an incredible benefit. It's such a beautiful sort of awe-inspiring thing to behold in real life, you know. I don't think photos do it justice. But yeah, I think we're looking to revisit a couple that we haven't played for quite a long time. Been working this week on trying to you know, get one song in particular ready for it again. So I think it'll be space heavy than usual, but you know, we're still going to play a few songs about coal mining, because, you know, why not?
No, totally. And that's the structure of it anyway. It's out of the same box, isn't it? Massive engineering.
Yeah, well, you get these threads moving through all that stuff. I think, you know, there's all kinds of little links between it. Even the stuff we ended up doing for the BBC, you know, the Titanic stuff, and focusing on, you know, the industrial heritage of Belfast for the first part of that. Mm. It has all kinds of links to every valley, and, you know, and again, sort of big tragic events. It's not unlike Fire in the Cockpit and stuff like that. So there are lots of common threads running through it, and that's one of the reasons why I don't like doing album playback shows, because you lose that relationship between all your material across the album. So I'd much rather kind of just jump about a bit in terms of as a material.
Yeah. But it does make it a more of a reason for us as fans to go to the gigs, because the albums are a different thing to the gigs, because you perform differently live.
Yep.
When you go to something like Blue Dot, are you going to go and experience other things? Are you going to science talks or the bands playing you want to go and see? Or is it an in and out?
Well, we get there, we travel up on Thursday night on the bus, so we will be there from early in the morning. But, you know, I think I am a little bit bogged down in press / other appearance things. There's about four or five things basically slotted into the day, so I don't really think we're going to get a great deal of time, sadly, to see much of the rest of the festival. We had a last time we played 2 years ago, we had a day off the day after we did, so we actually just stayed and enjoyed the festival, and it was great. You know, that doesn't happen very often for a touring band, so we were really, really pleased to get that day in. But this weekend we got three festivals in 3 days, so, you know, I think we'll turn up, do the gig, stick around for a few hours afterwards and hopefully soak up a bit in the atmosphere, and then it'll be on the bus and off to Yorkshire, I think, after that one. So yeah, in and out of it, I'm afraid.
Okay, fair enough. It is a gorgeous spot for a festival, though, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, and they're lovely folks who run it. Yeah. You know, not just the kind of the sort of the admin side of things from Kent Calling is the same kind of group of people, and they're lovely. But also, you know, Tim O'Brien and Theresa Anderson and all the sorts of people that. It's the University of Manchester, isn't it? It's the University of Manchester site. So, yeah, it's just been a nice place to spend some time, definitely.
Finally, you're a football fan. Have you thought about doing a World Cup song?
thought about it and had more suggestions for that than anything else, certainly recently, you know, a lot of people getting in touch, which is nice. But in terms of doing something official, FIFA would be a nightmare to deal with, I think, for rights reasons. I think they would probably want to charge the GDP of a small country to access their archive. So we wouldn't be able to do that. I wonder what the Lightning Seeds and Badil and Skinner did for Three Lions, whether they cleared all those commentary clips at the start, whether they just bunged them on and thought, we'll deal with that later. But, you know, there's always a chance of going rogue and doing something like that. But, you know, if the song ended up doing well, then I think you might well have quite a few problems. So, I don't know. I wouldn't rule it out again. I think it would have to come to do it in the way I would like to do it. I think it would have to come from, you know, an official footballing body. So, we'll see. I'm not holding my breath.
Okay. You don't hold your breath. I'm going to email the FA and sort it out for you. Euro 2020, okay. Right? Anyway, listen, thank you so much. I'll let you get ready for playing space things at the festival, where I'll see you on Friday.
Yes, Friday. That's the one.
Awesome. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Cheers, yeah. Well, thanks for all the kind words. Thank you.
I can't wait to see Jay Will Goose and Public Service Broadcasting again at Blue Dot Festival. Alongside them are performing the Chemical Brothers, the Flaming Lips, Future Islands, Gary Newman, and so much more. There's an awful lot of science going on there. And there's going to be on the Thursday night a performance of the Blue Planet Live. Now, that's a show that I was involved in back in 2006-2008, where the best of the BBC landmark TV series The Blue Planet was projected onto a huge screen and accompanied by a live symphony orchestra. As I say, this Thursday, the 19th of July, The Blue Planet Live will be performed in concert with the Halle Orchestra at Jodrell Bank as a very special one-off event at Blue Dot Festival. If you can, just get there. It is breathtaking. Thank you so much to Jay Will Goose for talking to me. If you're at the Blue Dot Festival, do come and see me and Maddie. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye. The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.